Well, hello again, and welcome to the AFTN Soccer Show on CITR Radio, broadcasting from the unceded Musqueam Territory at the University of British Columbia, 101.9 FM, CITR.ca online. I'm your host, Michael McCall.
I'm Zachary Adam Eisenhower. And with us is Steve
Pender.
And
I'm Steve Pender.
It's good to see you, Steve.
Well, we kind of, this got thrown up at us at the last second, this whole starting of the show. Yeah, Michael kind of didn't even give any warning.
No, I just had to start.
Yeah.
Well, no more messing about.
No more. And the Whitecaps didn't mess about yesterday either.
Oh. No. If you're listening to this on the podcast, this is episode 191. And it's been a fun weekend of football. We've had a Whitecaps win, a Whitecaps 2 draw. I was at a couple of provincial B Cup games at Burnaby Lake for 3 hours this evening, so a feast of football. And we've got a lot to talk about in the show. We're going to talk about the win in Montreal to start with. The Whitecaps finally get their first road win of the season.
Oh yeah.
I say finally. I mean, it's not as if we've been going on for like months and months without one, but it's nice to finally get one kind of out of the way. And it was a come from behind victory as well, so it was a kind of game of rarities. We won on the road, we came from behind, Andrew Jacobson scored
a beauty.
Yeah, it's just everything was going great. What was your impressions really of the overall win, I guess, just to start with? I mean, the performance to start with, how did you see it all going?
I thought it was a near road performance. Like, if you think of it, they didn't really give up too many chances, especially on target. They were able to clear the area in front of the net, and then on top of that, you know, and they didn't get phased by that early goal, because that early goal,
I mean,
in years past where they've completely lost it once that happens, they were able to get through that. They scored before the half, and then they just really control. I thought, especially in the first half, they controlled the game. Some of the stats you were mentioning before we came on air, that the possession was their highest. And if you look at even some of the other stats, like for example, their passing in the attacking half was better than Montreal, and I think really the most all year. They really like controlled that ball in the Montreal's half.
I think it was nice to see. I know there's something we want to talk about. It was nice to see. There seemed to be a lot of criticism at the Portland away game with a change in formation. I think some people were even questioning, Michael, even yourself, a little bit about how much time they had spent practicing the formation. So it was kind of nice to see them come out with the same formation. It looked like a same or very similar tactical approach and the same starting 11. I think that really, really helped.
Well, that was one of the other rarities. Robbo, for the first time this season. And if you speak to Robbo, and the Whitecaps mentioned this themselves on their own website, it's not that Robbo wants to change the team every week. It's not something, like, he would love to have a stable lineup. Unfortunately, injuries, other things have kind of dictated otherwise, suspensions. But back-to-back unchanged lineups. And I kind of predicted that that's what they were going to go with. I thought they were going to go with the 3DM, CM things again. It's like, depending on how you want to look at it, it was a 4-1-4-1. I feel it kind of turned out again. But, I mean, Steve touched there on the possession. The last two games, since they've moved to that three central midfield role, against Portland, that was their highest possession of the season, 47.81%. Beating that against Montreal, 48.47%. Still not 50%, but we've talked about it before. We can't keep giving up tons of possession, because at some point, a team is really going to punish us.
The thing is, against Montreal, they actually had more than 50% possession until the last 15 minutes of the game. And that's where Montreal took over. And that's where I think we're, like, and especially in the last 5 minutes, it was like really drastic.
Yeah, they were really pushing hard.
But so essentially, I think if you can almost count that as they won the possession in that game.
But the possession, though, is, for me, it doesn't have as much to do with the formation as it does to the tactical approach. And I think we begin to see this. I think when you go back to, I want to say the LA game, but I might be wrong. I don't know what the numbers are without looking at them. But I think it's more the tactical approach of how we're focusing our build-up play that has made a difference in the possession, which I think has led to, in my mind and in my sense, has led to more chances, and I think led to some of these results we've been having.
I mean, ultimately, possession, it doesn't mean much. It's what you do with it.
It's what everybody says every time.
I mean, the size of it, it could be 30%, but if you get the only goal of the game, who cares?
Right.
And if we get 50-odd percent and don't get a goal, having that possession means nothing.
And you look at it, they got 10 shots, 3 on target, and 2 goals. And that's a pretty good percentage if you want to go over there. Whereas Montreal had 18 shots, only 4 on goal, and obviously the one goal itself.
Yeah, and so another thing about the CBA, if you want to talk about possession, the one thing is in both these last two games were, 47, 48% possession, we still have yet to have a game where we actually have more possession than the opposition. So
I don't.
But it has increased greatly, yes.
Yeah. I think it's going to be rare anyway because...
Just because the personnel too.
Yeah, we haven't really had that much. How do you see the three midfielders working? Labba, Chani, Jacobson, they played against Portland, played against Montreal. If you're going to go with the three, do you feel that that's the three to go with? Obviously, Tybert's kind of on the outside looking in.
Yeah, he got on the pitch there at the end, right?
Well, just 90th minute. Yeah. I don't think he even got a touch on the ball.
Oh, it's just a shame that we'd made the subs because we could have had 4 DMs. It's like, as I tweeted out, it's a dream come true for Rob when someone said, Rob always dreams like 11 DMs on the park. So.
Yeah, I don't think those people know Rob very well. But I think, to be honest, in Portland, it felt a lot like the cup match there where Gersh was, there were 3 holding midfielders and Gersh was the guy pushed forward. And I know even though I think they worked on it in quite a bit that week in training, that was awkward for them, right? Like that was not, it showed in, we had chances, but it showed in the result, the goalless draw result. So Portland, to be honest, during and after the Portland game, it felt like, okay, this was a one-off. And it was kind of weird that Jacobson was the one pushing more forward because I totally felt like if you're going to choose one of the three, it would be probably Tony Chani or maybe Matias Labba because he's got a bit of form. He had a bit of form from the LA game in terms of going forward.
Yeah.
So it felt really awkward. And then
Jacobson had a couple of chances in Portland
totally.
That he wanted to fall to anyone
right.
that wasn't Jacobson.
So you got that header where you're like, oh. That needed to be on net, and then he had at least one where he just failed to get onto the end of it.
Yeah, Montero sent the ball in, he just couldn't bring it down.
Yeah, and so it felt kind of awkward, but then again, you go to another game and you go to the next game, same formation, again, appeared like the same tactical approach, and he put the chances away.
Yeah. And
he put a chance away and had a beautiful pass for another goal.
And you were talking to somebody about Jacobson. You can tell the story.
No, yeah, no. I just I asked someone, kind of how often have you seen AJ do that in training? And the person kind of said, actually, quite a bit. He's quite technical in training and some of his finishing.
Yeah, and I think he's done that before with other teams too, where he scored from distance, like outside the box area. It's just inside the box. Maybe he lacks a little bit finish around that area, which seems funny, but. You're talking about who would that be the three midfielders. I would still like a more dynamic player to be with Jacobson and Labba or Chani and Labba. A guy, obviously, when Reyna comes back, he would be the ideal guy to be in there. But even now, I think I kind of prefer Mosquito there. And then you have that holding midfielder to come off the bench and play, and if you're holding a lead or something like that.
Well, okay,
Mosquito or Bola either.
Okay, well, when you're talking about our midfield, it's nice to be able to look back on these two matches and see I think two performances that I think people are mostly happy with. I think see a number of positives in them, but if you're talking about like. Again, is our midfield dynamic? Again, there was flashes of it, like Jacobson's pass to the bug for the winning goal felt dynamic. But in terms of like consistent, like, and even just like the sense of, yeah, we have someone who's dynamic, like going to be going to run our offense from the midfield in a controlled, consistent kind of way. We don't have that. It's hard to think of who we've had even in the MLS era beyond glimpses of Pedro who did that. Because even Davide Chiumento struggled to play centrally because of some of his defensive deficiencies, if you will. And it's always been a problem, I think, in the MLS era of who is going to be the person who's going to run our midfield. Right before MLS, it was very clear. You had Jeff Clark. You had Martin Nash. You had guys who, like, you knew who was running the midfield. Obviously, these are different leagues and different levels and all that kind of stuff. But I think in the MLS era, it's always been like we've had some good destroyers. We had some guys who have scored some goals from midfield, who had some different things. Some people might want to talk about Baza and his contribution over a half a season, aside from what some people might call his antics or his approach or his attitude or whatever. But we really haven't had someone who has like really dominated our midfield and been like first on the team sheet and in control and. I don't know. I hear a number of people who talk that way, who've been talking that way for years. I don't know. What do you think, Michael?
We haven't seen that. I mean, we do need possibly. I've mentioned this before. It's pie in the sky, but a player like Scott Arfield, if we're playing a three center midfield role, someone like that in there would be dynamic.
Or like a young Adam Moffat.
Yeah.
When I mean dynamic, I want to make this clear. I want somebody that the other team is kind of worried about. Right now, I don't. Even though Jacobson scored, I don't think other opposition teams are worried about Chani and Jacobson pushing forward and scoring goals. I mean, it might change now that Jacobson did that, but I feel like they don't worry, so they're able to push forward too.
But here's the thing, though, Steve. If you take out one of those three and you put in Nico, who totally provides something totally different,
he provides pressure on the ball.
Right.
Yes.
It just, I think it changes the dynamic because right now you have. Laba sort of playing a little bit deeper as sort of a lone destroyer with those other two in front of him who are also defensively responsible / destroyer / breaking things up. It's like we're clogging the middle.
Because that's we've had midfielders, and we've talked about it so many times, that are either good defensively or good attacking, and we've never had someone that can swing both ways. And Chani was meant to be that guy. So let's talk about Chani's performance.
You're right.
Yeah. Chani. The first game he came on as a sub against LA, he looked, this is what we've been needing. And then, since then, we've not seen anything out of him that makes you think, yeah, he is worth... And we're going to talk about salaries in the second part. I mean, he is on over 300,000. For that kind of money, you need a lot more from him. Now, yeah, he wasn't playing before he came here. But he's not offering much just now. And... at some point, we're going to move away from having the three central midfielders in there. And we actually had a tweet from Gideon Hill on Twitter, at Gideon Hill 11, who says, if you're going back to the two, do you go with Chani or do you go with Jacobson? And up until yesterday, it was hard to say really that one was better than the other because Jacobson wasn't having a fantastic season.
I think it was better than Chani for sure.
So did you say you felt Jacobson was having a poor season?
No, he wasn't having that great a season compared with what we saw from him last year. Because he just didn't seem to... He didn't have the spark, but then yesterday, and I guess in Portland as well, it's kind of opened him up. He got a goal, he got an assist. He's got the freedom now to get forward. And I think in the earlier games this year, he was the weight of the defensive responsibility weighed heavily on him.
Yeah,
I think he still has defensive responsibility.
Yeah, he does, yeah. But the weight's not there now because you've got two other guys.
Because you have other, you have other people who are focusing on that. The other thing that we haven't talked about this, the formation and tactical approach, is these are road matches, and obviously we don't have to worry about playing at home for another like three matches or whatever. So we're fine. But yes, when this is, I think, because I could see us going with a similar approach for one, if not both of these next two games, but is what's going to happen when we come home? Is that still going to be the approach? Because it is, I think everyone would agree they've been good away from, yes. They've been away, good away performances. I think people would like us to be more on the front foot a little
folk
bit.
Yeah, always want us to play more attacking.
And I think wrong.
And I don't care how we play as long as we win.
I thought we were
fine
yesterday attacking wise. They got two goals.
Yeah.
They were able to hold on more.
I think he might admit it. I think Robbo feels the sense of at home we need to be a little more on the front foot.
Well, let's ask him. Robbo, line. No, just kidding.
I need to give him the number for the show in case he wants to call in at any point.
I think he's sleeping right now.
Well, I've got his number. Let's just give him a call.
Wait, is that his Welsh number or?
No, I've got his Vancouver number. His Welsh one, it was just all like, it didn't really work. But let's look at some of the other individuals. Let's look at the three goals, because that's going to bring us in talking about some of the individuals as well. Now, Montreal's goal, shot from distance, Donadel, went through a few players.
I think it went by players. They didn't really go through them.
Yeah. They were in the road. And it begs the question, though, did Usted see it late? Or should he just have done better and got down better? Because it was a bad goal for him to let in.
I think he was screened by Chani. I have, like, a lot of people were talking about, and Jay Duke tweeted a picture out about the way the everybody was positioned in the marking. I had a big problem with that, but there was two other problems that I had. And these are obviously minor things that if were different, would have not, the goal might not have happened. One was Chani. Instead of, sure, he was at a distance from Donadel, but if he had squared up to him, instead of kind of breezing through by him, kind of from a distance, I think that would have affected the shot. Second of all, if Parker had lined up with his back four, it would have put Jackson Hamill in an offside position,
right,
and he interfered with the ball on his. Not, he didn't touch the ball, but he kind of was in the spot, yeah, where the ball went by, so we would have put him offside, yeah,
so
at that point.
I saw the first goal through the eyes and the voice of Peter Shad on the radio, and that's kind of what they were saying. They felt was taking place was that David's delayed reaction was because he was worried that Jackson Hamel was going to get a touch, not unlike he did for his first league goal a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
and so it made him not look great on the play, but he was thrown off by that, basically.
And you hope that Parker would have, if Parker like was in line, that it might have been called offside, but you never know with linesmen too. They might not have done anything there.
It was one of those goals that went in, and you, well, me being Mr. Pessimist, I feared the worst. Got to admit that. And the fighting spirit that the team showed to get back into the game was fantastic.
Yeah.
And they had a couple of close calls before it, and then Bola sends a free kick in. It's cleared, but only to Jacobson at the edge of the box. And what a strike by AJ.
Nice. He kind of placed it. It wasn't even like a strike. It was almost like he just wanted to put it right in the right spot.
And I can't remember who it was that tweeted out now. He said it was pure filth, which to me is his new nickname. AJ's a crap name. Like,
hashtag pure filth.
Yeah, and it's like Chani wants to be known as TT. No, no, no. Bad names. You want something like Andrew, pure filth.
There was the boxing match on right after.
Yeah.
Or I think it was on at the same time. So in the pub, we were watching it, and then like we were watching the game, and looked over the boxing match, and they had what's his name, Andrew Joshua.
Yeah, AJ.
So he was walking into the thing, and I don't know if you saw it. It was like huge pyro with the letters AJ.
Yeah. That was a fantastic fight, actually. Just to digress for a second, that was like heavyweight boxing of old, and Joshua's a great boxer. Managed to avoid it, I thought, for most of the game. And then at the WFC 2 game, Robert Enshaw and Sam Adekugbe were talking about it. And it didn't totally spoil it, because I misunderstood. I knew it finished in the 11th round, and I thought Klitschko had won. So it was a pleasant sight when I got to watch it. But anyway, digressing and back to football talk. So yeah, Jacobson made it 1-1. And then as Steve mentioned, after that, the Whitecaps kind of, can't really say took over, but they had the better of the game. And there was a spell, though, at about the hour mark onwards, where Montreal were pushing hard. Ballou, Tabla, couple of chances. David Usted made up for any mistake that he had with the first goal with a couple of fantastic stops, a couple of big leg saves off Tabla, a sprawling stop as well. And it's that thing, it's like fine lines, as Robbo would say. It's those things, like a goalkeeper comes up big. And as I said, we're going to talk about salaries in part two. But I mean, Usted, 380,000 he's on. Some folk are like, do you need a goalkeeper that's on that kind of wages? When he comes up with match-winning saves like that, every point that he then sort of makes is fantastic for it. And I mean, he had a good game. Defensively as well, Shannon Williams, we've got to talk about that. He had a game-high 6 tackles.
Yeah.
And second on the team with 5 clearances behind Kendall Waston. Really starting to come into his own.
I saw 6 when I was looking at his stats.
Yeah, I got that from the Caps site as 5.
I saw MLS at 6.
Ah, I'd go with MLS.
Fine lines.
Caps.
Yeah. But I personally thought, I know the goals were scored by the other guys, but I think he had a shout for player of the game, man of the match.
He basically
shut down Piatti.
Yeah.
Piatti had to move to switch the other sides in order to, or switch around to get some look at the ball. Otherwise, he was getting nothing.
Well, that
and he was getting
thing.
Frustrated.
The
too.
Last 2 weeks, this lineup has shut down Valeri, apart from the one cross that he got for one of the goals. And Piatti was like almost invisible yesterday. And if we can snub out danger guys on other teams by doing this, then it's fantastic. But Williams starting to come into his own now, finding his feet, made the right back spot his own after going to and from with Nerwinski at the start of the season. We expected him to be the starter. And he's showing some experience. He's showing the best of what he showed before in Houston. We seem to get guys that are... Like Chani was great with Columbus before, instrumental in them getting to an MLS Cup. Williams was good with Houston in the past, but we seem to be getting them as their stars are fading a little bit. And Chani hasn't shown that he's relit his star yet, but Williams, I think, has.
It's early for Chani still. He just came
in. Oh, yeah, we can't write him off.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think the back line, I think, did well yesterday. I think it was Piatti. And talking about shutting down Piatti, I think it was Piatti that Kendall had that battle with down to the touchline and like totally just like jockeyed until the ball went out or whatever, but like totally out. I thought it was Piatti.
I can't remember. I know Parker had a fantastic touchline battle where he just shoved the guy. I liked that.
Which his family in the crowd would have really appreciated.
It's like that's what you're wanting from the defenders and getting away with it as well. Last thing we'll talk about in this segment is the second goal and the play of the bug, Christian Teixeira. Now, when we're talking about the goal, everyone's talking about AJ's assist, great finishing composure by Teixeira. But before that, we kind of have to give a hat tip to Alphonso Davies for having the football savvy as a 16-year-old. I don't know if anyone knew that he was 16, but he's only 16 and he showed the football intellect to set that play up as opposed to just like tearing forward.
Yeah, he has done that in the past where he just got the ball and just took it. But this time he definitely.
I swear he was 17 the way he made that pass. But yeah, I mean, he set that up. Then AJ, brilliant ball to put Teixeira through. Now, Teixeira as well, we've kind of seen this before. A lot of guys in the past would maybe have shot first time.
Well, but here, okay. When you see it, you're just like, wow, it's great. It's almost like I guess sometimes the language is used, undress Simone or whatever. Like, you see Simone slide and he cuts back on his left. But after the first thought of like, wow, what a goal, we're in the lead, this is amazing. My second thought was like, has Laurent Simon never watched any video of Christian Teixeira? Because
he does pull the ball back a lot.
No, because there were like, I don't know if you like, I was watching and I was like, there's no way he's shooting this with his right foot.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Yeah, but when you're in that situation, you're not thinking back, oh, what did my coach tell me?
No, but this was like a player of Simon's quality, like, I think knows that in his head and it just plays out in how he plays.
Yeah.
And this was not. You know how Christian and Kendall got beaten in snow in Salt Lake. This was like he like 1,000 times bit like full out dive slide to try and block a shot on Teixeira's right foot. To me, it felt like he doesn't know Teixeira's game that well.
Obviously, he didn't.
It was great play by Teixeira. Don't get me wrong.
I agree with you about Davies. And then what I really liked about it is that Davies just didn't make the pass and just, you know, admired it. He actually followed through it. If you watch a replay from a different angle, he's right there. Could have easily taken the pass and just slotted it home. No, he was all open in that box. And there was, I think, one other player. I can't remember who that was. But, yeah, overall, great play by Teixeira. I'm glad he didn't shoot, like you said, right away, because that's what they normally do. But, you know, overall, great play.
And Teixeira, I mean, it's things we've talked about so many times. It's like, we want the bug from 2015 back. And he started to show glimpses that he could be back. And it's what we need. He's been playing really well the last few games. And if Robbo wants to kind of go with a pretty settled lineup, it looks like he has made the left wing position his own. And we got a tweet through from Angus Walker, at Angus Walker on Twitter. And he just talking about the formation, he wants to replace one of the two sort of Jacobson or Chani guys with Davies and to move Bola back to the middle, which would obviously mean change the formation back to, I don't know, 4-2-3-1 or a 4-1-3-2.
Which you'd think you'd see at home. Like, that's what I think will happen in three games at home, is you'll go back to 4-2-3-1, Teixeira on one side, Alphonso on the other, Bola in the middle, and two of the three holding.
I say play 4-1-4-1. Because I think they're getting way more attack with this, too. I'm not saying I don't like it.
I just think that's what will happen.
Yeah. No, I say stick with this.
Of course, a lot of what is going to happen formation-wise and team selection-wise is going to depend on injuries to the team. And there's been some more, sadly. And we're going to talk about that and salaries after these messages.
This Quarter Magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theatre, Discorder lives. Your favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theatre. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder magazine or at rickshawtheatre.com.
Across Canada, over 500,000 people are living with dementia, including thousands of British Columbians. Join the Alzheimer's Society of BC on the first Sunday of May at the Investors Group Walk for Alzheimer's to honor and remember those who face dementia in your community. When we walk, we make memories matter. You honor people who have passed and acknowledge the work that must be done to ensure help and hope for people living with the disease today. Visit www.walkforalzheimers.ca to find a walk near you. Vancouver's cultural landscape is changing. On May 21st, join the Chinese-Canadian Historical Society of British Columbia on a free walking tour and explore Vancouver's cultural landscape in relation to the past, present, and future. The tour will meet at 11 a.m. at the Chinese Cultural Center on 50 East Pender Street. Presented by the Chinese-Canadian Historical Society of BC in celebration of Asian Heritage Month.
May 6th, you are invited to the Vancouver Ikebana Spring Show from 11:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Come experience an afternoon filled with the beauty and artistry of Ikebana, the Japanese art of flower arranging. This show will feature displays from four Ikebana schools and live demonstrations at 1:30 p.m. and 3:30 p.m. at the Alan Emmott Centre, 6650 South Oaks Crescent, Burnaby. For more information, email kuniy@telus.net.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AFTN Soccer Show on CIT Radio, broadcasting from the University of British Columbia on the unceded Musqueam territory. 101.9 FM, CITR.ca online. So before the break there, we talked about the Whitecaps' fantastic win in Montreal. Part of the reason, I think, though, that the Whitecaps team wasn't changed is Carl Robinson didn't really have a lot of personnel available to him. Some more injuries during the week.
Yeah.
Does beg the question, what the hell are they doing at training? Because three of the fresh injuries happened at training. So right now,
they're battling for places, yeah, Michael.
Long-term injuries. We know that Brick Shea is out. He seems to be the closest to coming back. He could return to training possibly within the next 2, 3, 4 weeks. So there's a good chance that we might see him back for June. Brett Levis, still looking at the summer
July,
for him.
Yeah, at the earliest.
Jordi Reyna, I'm going to ask Rob about that this week, because Jordi Reyna is still in a walking boot.
No.
He's not anymore.
He has had the boot off. I've been told he's had the boot off. I think he took it off this week, last week. There was a period.
Did he get permission to take it off?
I believe so, yes. Okay. I believe he has been the week before that, it was a little bit on, a little bit off. And I asked, was that just for fashion? But no, it was just precautionary. So I think, I don't know if it's off full time now, but I think they're there or thereabouts.
Well, his boot may be off, but Eric Hurtado is still in a boot.
No, he's not in a boot. He's not in a boot, but he's probably at least, I would say, 4 weeks away.
Oh, I thought you mentioned he was in a boot yesterday.
No, not in a boot.
So that was the long-term injuries that we knew. Marco Bustos injured himself about 2 weeks ago at training.
Was that a hamstring?
It was a hamstring.
But he played last week. He aggravated?
Yeah, okay. He played last week, the first half, on his birthday against San Antonio. Scored, but then aggravated the hamstring and was pulled off at halftime.
Mm.
And, I mean, sometimes it's great to be pulled off on your birthday, but in a case like that, that wasn't good for Marco.
No, not that time.
And he's missed Saturday's game against San Antonio. So we have to hope that they can rest him up. Oh, yes, Sacramento. Too many sa. Really confusing.
But then there's, what is it, 3 injuries this week in training?
3 fresh injuries at training. Kyle Gregg, tight quad. You have to think he was a guy.
He was in Montreal, though, right? It was
on Friday when he was in Montreal that he actually injured himself. So you have to think he was going to feature in the game day squad again, possibly getting a few more minutes, depending on how the game had gone. Although if it had gone as it went, I don't think he might have got on.
But like, that's really unfortunate, because this is his time.
Yep.
Again, we've talked about taking your opportunities. Yeah. This is the hour for Kyle to make his talents known.
Yeah, and he got his first few minutes in Portland. We didn't really get a chance to see too much of him. Marcel de Jong is another guy that got injured in training this week, his knee. And, I mean, De Jong's been on the fringes of the squad as it is. So, my feeling has been that De Jong is in the squad until Brett Levis gets back. And then once you know that Brett's okay and a good backup for Jordan Harvey, they may move De Jong on. If he's injured, they won't, obviously, because they can't. But then he's not got a chance to kind of prove his worth either just now. And if something happens that Harvey goes down, the guys that can play at left back, you've got Brett Levis injured, Marcel de Jong injured, and now the fresh and the last injury for the week, Christian Dean. And we don't know the full details yet of Christian Dean's injury. Josh Clipperton from Canadian Press tweeted out on Saturday that he'd injured himself during the week, and it was the same foot that was the 2 injuries last season.
Was the same injury? Same, like, because before it was broken.
Yeah, we don't know whether it's broken yet. We've not had any confirmation on that. I have heard it's not looking good, but it could be not looking good and that he's just out for a little bit.
Yeah.
Or the worst case scenario, and I think we all hope and pray that it's not this, that he's broken his foot again.
Yeah. Metatarsal?
No, that wasn't his issue before.
No.
No. Okay.
I spoke to him in Wales, and he said, you can't play thinking you're maybe going to injure your foot again. But he did feel a little bit of pain in it one day, and then he didn't train the day after that. and they had a game the day after that. But he wanted to show Robbo his worth, so he played, and nothing happened. Every time, though, that he went in for a tackle, and Nathan Vanstone, the Caps comms guy, just told me, because it was the same with Kakuta. Every time Kakuta or Dean went in for a tackle, I was like, oh, no, oh, and you're just, like, fearing the worst. And it's like, it's fine, it's fine. Obviously, now it's not fine.
Does he have, I forget now, because I did ask this before, but does he have any metal in there from any of those things from before?
No, I don't think they put a metal in the foot.
Okay.
But, yeah, let's speculate. If it is broken again, what is that going to do, not just for him physically and his chances with the team, but mentally as well? He went through so much last year, admitted that he was in some dark places at times with the death of his father, the two injuries that he had. He's such a great guy off the pitch. I mean, we've both talked to him lots, and you just really feel for him.
Yeah, you wonder in the comms, people trying to make the players human and relatable and all that, and having that, yeah, big, I guess, was it written by himself? Was that they had him write it, I think?
Yeah.
So with him being so transparent, something obviously we're not very used to dealing with MLS, but with him being so transparent, one wonders, is that helpful? Okay, that he might be laid up for 6 to 8 weeks again or something like that. So is that helpful? Because people know, okay, last time this happened, he wasn't in a good place. Like, even his teammates, does it help, like, them to...
Well, yeah, they'll know.
They'll know. Or is it just... Or does it make it worse that...
I don't know.
I don't know either. I'm just asking the question.
The Caps are good and the players are good at rallying round. The good thing for Christian is his roommate is Ben McKendry.
Oh, okay.
And Ben's a great guy. When they both had their injury problems, they were both there for each other. Right. So you know he's going to be there again. Ben's family will be there for him as well. And the biggest concern for me, whether it's broken, whether it's not broken, the fact that he's injured it again, how long-term damaging is this to his career? Because not only can you not have a player that's going to keep getting injured, if he decides to move on from Vancouver, or if the Caps decide to move him on, he's not going to be an attractive proposition for teams on the salary that he's on right away just now anyway. But also the fact that he's a guy that just keeps injuring himself.
Well, a couple of things. One is, I don't think salary is a huge issue for him. I think playing is his number one.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I mean, he would have taken a pay cut this year to come back.
Yeah. So the other thing, and I know some people might, based on some of the criticism that he's faced this season from on social media anyways, some people might be surprised, but there are people who have been watching him and keeping tabs on him, I think both on this continent and on other continents. So, like, there are some people who feel his upside is huge outside of our club.
It is. He just needs to have regular playing time.
That's the problem. It's not really it's his development is going to be hindered, like you said. I think that's the biggest problem right now, because he's got the raw talent. Everybody knows that. He's shown little bits and pieces when he has been able to get on the pitch. But if he can't get on the pitch, he can't develop and he can't take that next step that will get him to, like you were talking about, Europe and people looking at him and stuff like that.
And we just want to wish Christian all the best and hope that it's not as bad as we're fearing and some things that's kind of coming through the grapevine. I'm sure we'll find out this week. We'll speak to Robbo on Tuesday and Wednesday and find out. But just want to send best wishes to Christian and all the guys that's injured just now. And hopefully they're going to be back soon. And Robbo's talked about not wanting to stockpile players, not wanting to bring guys in now, knowing that guys are going to be healthy. The problem, though, that we have in the centre-back department is you've got Edgar out, Dean's now out, Cole Seiler didn't feature on the bench yesterday. In fact, you pointed out to me there was no central defenders on the bench.
When I saw the 18 yesterday, I was just like, okay, AJ's our third-choice centre-back in this 18.
Yeah.
So if someone...
Yeah, essentially that would have happened. He would have moved back.
Yeah, he's good. I'm comfortable with him doing that.
But it's kind of awkward when you have no central defensive
Because right now, we've got Parker and Waston both of who could technically get called up in June for World Cup qualifiers.
No, I think they, I think Parker's on the outside looking at
Parker's maybe
Parker's
a
more,
long
of gold,
shot.
More of a Gold Cup call-up.
Yeah, well, there's Gold Cup then as well. It's
and,
like
and Kendall will be a...
But they can, if injury issues, they can stop Parker from going if they have to. They can hold him back.
I don't know.
I don't think they like the block. They don't like the block pathways.
No.
This time maybe they will. But
except for maybe Alphonso Davies playing for U17s, U20.
Okay. Canada, so.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I think they will. I think they should sign somebody now or trade for somebody.
Yeah.
Some lower level guy just to fill in some spots that they can eventually release at the end of the year.
They could give Sam DeWitt or Francis DeVries a contract, but then they have their contract. So they.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't do that. I would bring in some. I think they need a veteran. I don't think a young guy's going to help out.
Well, of course, there was the rumors, two rumors of Effie Ambrose and John Terry.
I'm not talking about
John
that
Terry
kind of,
was not a
rumor. I'm not talking about that kind of veteran. Yeah. I'm talking about within MLS, bringing somebody from that's not playing that much.
Someone like Terry, you don't want to upset the harmony of the Wags, for one thing.
Hmm.
We won't cross that bridge.
And by the way, I was just joking. I don't know anything about Alphonso Davies in the U17, U20s. I just know when he was, there was talk that he was supposed to be in the U17s, and then he didn't go.
Yes.
And
no one said you're just making a harmless joke.
Yeah.
So rumors start. Anyway, we talked about Christian Dean's salary there. And if we're bringing anyone in, whether it's a central defender or whatever, salaries are going to be important. David Edgar, we are going to get relief for his season-ending injury. He's on guaranteed compensation of 183 just now. But that has to get used.
By May 8th?
Yes.
Yes. See, this is the thing where it's like we're on the clock. So this is
the Effie Ambrose...
Well,
rumor.
it doesn't have to be for a center back, right? It can be for whatever you want. No, it just the cap space.
Let's not worry about that. We could go until 2 o'clock.
But that was
let's just think they got to fill in the spot. Yes. No, let's not worry about the specifics.
No, but that was one of the concerns. I think one of the brouhahas on social media again about I don't know if it was after the Portland game or the game.
There was a brouhaha on social media.
Shocking. Hashtag shocking.
Hopefully not Twitter, because...
Yeah. That's a safe space.
Yeah.
No, but there was like, oh, he said, oh, there's no players imminent, and then like all...
Yes.
Like everything, you know, everyone freaked out or whatever.
Well, if obviously we know Edgar's gone, and if Dean... They would obviously know if Dean is gone for a very extended period, they need to bring somebody in.
They have to, because they can't rely on the three with Cole Seiler being the third.
And then Waston going away too.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know what happened to Cole this weekend, right?
No, I think he possibly travelled and then just didn't get in the 18 because they thought AJ was a good option.
He wasn't WFC2?
No.
Okay. No, yeah, he was not there.
Maybe he was another injury, but they didn't want to pile it on.
Possibly. So like, the salaries were announced last week. It's... always a fun time.
If Zach, you want to take a break from this part of the thing? Because I know you're upset about salaries getting released and stuff like that.
I'm not
upset. Or do you want to just talk about it for five minutes?
That's Kendall Waston's wife that doesn't like to get salaries released.
Well,
Did she talk
to her union then and discuss that. Because they're the ones that wanted
it. Is there a WAX union?
No, I mean the players union.
Ah, okay.
No, it's an incredibly awkward thing, right? Like,
yes.
So, and Steve, you and I were talking about it last week when we bumped into each other in the Langley Massive. But
you didn't reveal your salaries to each other, did you?
No.
Okay.
No,
okay.
No.
Right. Just
we were wearing T-shirts with our salary number on.
Okay.
It's an awkward thing in the locker room. It's an awkward thing for players. You look at books that were written about like when Golden Balls was in LA.
Yeah.
And how he maybe went out of his way to make it not awkward, but it was awkward.
Well, it's like here, Camilo saw what Kenny Miller was getting
yes,
paid and said,
totally.
I deserve Kenny Miller's money because I'm scoring goals.
Yes. Yeah. You have other teams where we've heard stories of DPs or whatever paying so they're in first class and what those kind of things.
Yes.
But Steve, you know, as we were talking the other day, Steve, you brought up a good point that this is like a catch-22 for the union, because the union wants to publish these to show how little their players are actually making and to help drive up.
And it has increased the minimum salary, because remember minimum salary used to be like 25,000 or 30,000.
Yeah. 32.
And I think the lowest played guy is Cole Seiler at 53.
Right.
I just don't understand why some guys get paid 4 cents. Was that like a deal breaker?
Could have been.
I'm not coming to MLS unless I get that 4 cents.
Yeah, that's one of those napkin things,
taxes.
I'm sure.
Maybe they're accounting for taxes. Oh.
But no. But so it's so the HST. Union for the union. It's a way to hopefully help their players in the long run. But in terms of the individual teams and the chemistry in the
teams, the league doesn't. So I guess you guys falling on MLS side for once, because MLS has no desire to release these salaries. And the teams have no desire to release these salaries
yeah,
at all.
Yeah, I mean, I personally think that someone's salary should be a private matter. I've just never liked it. It's never sat comfortably with me.
Well, I was telling Steve this. I'm in a world where in one position I had that was every year at the AGM, the salaries of the workers, they were there for everyone to see. So it's I've been in that. It's not the same, obviously, but I've been in that kind of awkward thing, but you're right. It's not good for the chemistry.
No.
It's not good for the harmony.
And if we want to talk about some of the awkward salaries,
yeah,
I've kind of just printed a few off here. We won't go through.
I tweeted one out, the whole like listing from top to bottom.
We won't go through every single player salary, but some of the ones that jump out. If we look at our DPs first of all, you've got Montero in 1.8, but that was kind of known that. That
right.
was pretty much what he was on.
And without talking about that in too much detail, right, he is on loan. And
yes.
What's common when you're on loan is that your parent club, if I can use that language, is not you have a contract with your parent club, and the club you're on loan with often will pay – sometimes it can be all of that, but sometimes it's not all of that. I think it's highly unlikely that that 1.8 is all that contract is worth.
Yes. It would be surprising because, most loan deals or a lot of loan deals, the parent club does pay part of their wages.
And if you look at the situation, the Chinese club had too many foreign players on their squad. And so I think that's where we had some leverage.
So he was getting more than Pedro was making last year.
Right.
And for me, so far, he's worth that money. So I've no complaints about that.
And I think he's and you talk about worth. Again, if you think...
in the grand scheme of football, it's like a bargain.
Right, but if you also think that we're only paying a portion of what the money he's actually making,
yes,
then it's very much so a good deal in that sense.
Matty Laba, he's always a guy that when we talk about different things with salaries, we can talk about buying down. He's a name that crops up. Oh, why don't we buy him down and not make him a DP? He's currently on a guaranteed salary of 885.
That is too high for me.
Yeah, and you can't buy that down without using a hell of a lot of allocation money.
Now, is that part? That's not the transfer fee included in that, is it? Or I have no idea.
I don't know anymore.
Yeah,
it's
I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was. If it was amortized over the length of the contract.
So he might not be making all that 85.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which, again, is part of, when this thing comes out, people are like, oh, we know everything about what the players are making. We know their salaries. We don't. These things don't include, how much TAM are they on? Some players, yes, we know which players are TAM, but we don't know how much TAM we're making. One of the things, and so this is, I kind of wasted it, but this was when Garber was here. I almost called him by his nickname, but when Garber was here, I asked him that question because we've heard from more than one public source, and I've heard from at least one private source, not enough to talk about. Now, I haven't heard from multiple sources enough or sources that would go on the record enough, but that there are these numbers are not all that players are making, and there's ways to get around that.
Yeah, I'm sure there always is.
So I asked Garber at that thing. Here are two public examples, what's gone on with Fabian Castillo in Dallas and Merritt Paulson tweeting out that, I forget which one of his DPs it was back in the day, that we are paying that player more than what it says on the union numbers.
But I don't know why you would even come and publicly admit that. I mean,
I forget. There was a context.
Yes.
There was a context to it.
Yeah, but it's just weird.
But Garber kind of said, no, we are all above board. And
Paulson is weird.
Mallet was like, oh, we have to sign a thing that says we won't break any rules and blah, blah, blah. But there.
You look at the LA salaries and it's
You know what salary you want to look at? Montreal. Now, Montreal salary, I was looking at that.
Well, they get paid in cheese curds.
Touché. For example, Mancuso, $800,000. Lauren Simon, 661. That seems reasonable. But then you got Piatti at 450. That seems low.
Yeah.
I'd Donadella at 386.
To get Piatti for 450 here.
Donadella 386. And then the other one, Bernadello, 288. That seems low.
In Bernadello,
I have a feeling those guys have jobs at the Saputo Dairy Factory.
Bernadello. Sweeping up. I think when he was there with him the first time, he was a DP. So I don't know if that had to do with transfer money or whatever, but he was a DP before. And that's, I think, one of the reasons he left, because it wasn't working out with him with that tag.
Yeah.
The other thing, which doesn't come up, and we don't know all the rules. We don't know where all the napkins are at MLSHQ and what they all say on them. But one thing that I think has come, I think this is kind of publicly known, but
it's going to be now.
You can have one, at least I think one player on your roster who is a player coach. So their salary that you see at the union does not include what they're getting paid as a coach.
Which I think will be Mauro Rosales, because he was coming in at 65 for us, which
you
can't really see happening.
Which would make sense.
A couple of quick ones just that also jump out. Well, Breck Shea, we knew he was going to be a DP, 670,000. I don't see that being.
It's a better deal than Giles Barnes, though.
Again, I've said this on multiple shows already this year. Both of Breck and Matias need to be TAM players at most.
Yeah. Yes. Then, don't want to sign that I'm piling on him. Russell Tiber. And I know his salary, it doesn't count. He's a homegrown.
Doesn't count against the cap, but there is
you're
allocation
still pissing money. Away $194,000. That annoys me.
There's allocation money that can be that is for homegrown players.
Yeah.
And he's getting some of that.
So I just don't like.
It's not totally free.
I don't like the club wasting money.
You don't like the optics of it.
I don't like the optics that a player that is not a regular is making more than. Like, I know they're different positions, but Timmy Parker.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a steal. He needs a better agent at this rate. If he's only getting, 99,000?
And he went, he did get an increase.
Yes.
From last year.
Oh, the regular, union.
He got more.
Oh, got more? Okay, yeah. Then that's fine.
He got more than the regular increase.
But the thing is, when he was drafted, I think, after the 10th pick. And usually that's about how much players get around that time. I don't think it was before 10. But even if it was before 10, those college players are taking lower salaries. He's just outplayed his contract at this point, and when he contract is up, he will get that raise. If you swap Parker and Dean salaries, then it's fine.
Yeah.
Everybody's happy because nobody has a problem with Dean.
Because Dean's 202,000 guaranteed. And that's only 125
but again,
base.
But yeah, so in salary cap, it makes sense. But relationally, what does that do?
Yeah. Because, I mean, Parker must be thinking, well, I'm starting every single game.
It's
on the fringe of the American national team setup, and I'm getting this paltry figure. Now, obviously, options and everything come into it, but if I was Parker, I'd be like, look, I want more money or I want to move on.
Which is, you wonder how does that all play out?
He's going to get more money. I don't think you have to worry about him moving on because he will get more money. You guys are like talking about things that are like not going to happen. When his contract is up, Waston probably won't be there. He will be the number one center back on the Whitecaps.
But again, this is professional sports. We just spent how much time talking about how many guys are injured this year alone.
Yeah, 1.6 million from the four long-term guys of Hurtado, Reyna, Edgar, Brett Levis.
So Parker gets
Parker gets
a serious injury, and his options are worthless, and he, you know, while he was playing his best, he made very limited amount of money.
That's life.
Oh, I'm not saying it's not, but it's not.
That's life with anybody.
But again,
not just professional sports.
Again, you have to worry about relationships.
Yes.
And these two times a year when this comes out must be the worst for Robbo and the coaches.
Yeah,
they must hate it.
They don't care, and you guys are making a big deal.
No, dude. He already mentioned one of the most frustrating things that's happened in the life of the MLS era of our club, right? We lost a golden boot, like MVP player, because we did not handle this right. We did not do well at this. So it's not without foundation. It's not without cause that this is a
concern. And it can certainly happen again.
We lost that player because he broke rules and he left his
please.
Contract.
Yeah, how naive are you being, Steve? Come on.
I'm telling the facts.
No.
Let's move. See, now we're falling out over salaries, and nobody wants that. So I think we'll just cut this short. We'll have a few more ads for you, and then we'll be back with our last segment, and then wrap the show up. So we'll be back after these messages.
Ever had a hankering to ski the world-famous slopes of Whistler? Boy, do we have great news for you. Escape the city in one of Zipcar's many mountain-ready vehicles. Plus, get $30 back in free driving credit when you tweet a selfie on the slopes at Zipcar Vancouver. Zipcar, wheels when you want them.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theatre, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theatre, visit their website at www.riotheatre.ca.
On May the 5th, the East Vancouver Community Music School is hosting the first annual Spring Benefit Concert with special guests The Ruffle Feathers, Francois Huell, and the Fictionalist Comedy Company at the Unitarian Church of Vancouver. Wine, snacks, a silent auction, and art from 7 to 8 p.m., music and comedy from 8 to 10. Although the EVCMS does not yet have a permanent home of their own, their immediate goal is to raise money so they may continue to provide music lessons at subsidized rates, ensuring that students from low-income households can pursue a musical education. Tickets to the event are sold on brown paper tickets.
More than 100 million wild animals are killed each year illegally. Poaching is a major threat to our country's wildlife. I'm Tom Barry. I'm an actor with a desire to preserve living space for wildlife. The Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust does just that. Works with private landowners to protect wildlife, to preserve natural habitats. To learn more or to work with the Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust, call 800-729-SAVE. That's 800-729-SAVE or visit wildlifelandtrust.org. Thank you.
Steve trying to drag our show out of the 70s and 80s, kicking and screaming. He's going to get his wish, I think. You're listening to the AFT and Soccer Show on CITR Radio, broadcasting from the University of British Columbia on the unceded Musqueam Territory. So just before the break there, we're talking about salaries. And one thing I forgot to mention was the Whitecaps actually sit pretty average. They're ninth, I think, in the highest salaries. So everyone's always going on about the Whitecaps need to spend more. We're spending a lot.
Yeah, but it's not. I've never had a problem with their spending. Their issue is that top three players, and it's not even the top one.
I guess it's
the number two and number three player. Other than that, I have no problem with the rest of the salaries.
It's the designated players are the issue.
So let's move on from salaries, and it's time now for our wavelength section of the show. Now, WFC2 yesterday. We're playing San Antonio. I've got that right this time.
Sacramento.
I haven't got that right this time.
The Republic.
WFC2. We're playing Sacramento Republic. 0-0 draw. It was a good game. We won't go into that in too much. But the highlight of the game was it was Bark at the Bird. It's my favorite theme thing of the year.
You didn't even bring your dog.
He doesn't really like football. Oh. Well, he'd get bored for 90 minutes. I'm waffling because Steve's trying to get the thing lined up here and he's not doing very well.
One interesting thing for me was we talked about, I think, the first two games for WFC2. They played a very interesting formation. I think it was like a 3-1-4-2-1. I probably have an extra number in there. But they played a different formation. And in your conversation with Rich Fagan, you asked him about the formation and he said, I spoke with Raul and asked if I could do something different.
Yes.
Which is music to my ears because they always talk about playing the same and then they don't really do it. But it was good to hear that. And then this game, they played a what on paper they called a 4-3-3.
But he said that was because just of the personnel that they had available.
Okay, because it looked similar
which does make me wonder that Cole Seiler was, as we mentioned, out in Montreal.
But it looks the similar formation we played these last two games.
True. But anyway, it was Bark at the Bird. And in a couple of weeks' time, it's going to be Mutts at McLeod. Dogs in football, it's the way to go. Zach's just looking mortified here by this. He's not a dog lover.
You were there. You were the thing you wanted to happen most yesterday was for a dog to run on the pitch.
It was, which brings us nicely to our wavelength section of the show. And we're going back to 1995, perennial favourites of the AFTN soccer show, Half Man, Half Biscuit, from their Some Call It Godcore album. So mentioning God there for you, you'll be a fan of that, Zach. And this is a song about dogs on the pitch. I just thought we'd tie it in. What could be better? So this is Half Man, Half Biscuit with Even Men with Steel Hearts. Love to see a dog on the pitch.
Everything's gone horribly wrong. Cars are too fast, cause the drivers are slow. Joyride boy died, nothing to myself. From Magdalen to Sellafield, the scant regard for how we feel. Sheep are green, dead roses too. I know it sounds bleak, but hey, don't despair. Cause even men with steel hearts love to see a dog on the pitch. Even men with steel hearts love to see a dog on the pitch. It generates a warmth around the ground that augurs well for mankind. Cape of no hope, dark road can light on the end of a rope. Yet by the stream, in summertime, the charming lark, the country chime, smite this faithless pantomime. Welcome to the daylight at the back of my mind. Even men with steel hearts love to see a dog on the pitch. Even men with steel hearts love to see a dog on the pitch. Generates a warmth around the ground that augurs well for mankind.
Half Man, Half Biscuit there with Even Men with Steel Hearts. Love to see a dog on the pitch from their 1995 album, Some Call It Godcore.
It feels like the dog was put down the way the song ended abruptly there.
Dogs and football go together. Zach just does not agree. But then Zach's not agreeing with anything tonight, because what you all missed while we were playing that is Zach and Steve are still arguing about Camillo's situation. Let it go.
Oh, no, we're not talking about it now. We're okay. Moving on to the next thing.
All you need to know about Camillo is go and watch his goal from this weekend. If you haven't seen it, make sure you find it.
Eric Hurtado-esque. I say esque because it ended up in the back of the net.
Beautiful.
So, let's get back to some football chat. Colorado. It's the team that's coming up next.
Bottom of the Western table.
Yes. They surprised a lot of folk last season with their strong start. They've got Mr. Sweary back from his suspension.
No, he's not back.
Yeah, he's back.
What?
This was his last game that he served.
No, really?
Yes, he is back against the Whitecaps.
That's unfortunate. I thought he had one more.
As things stand just now, the Caps are sixth in the Western Conference, hanging on to that last playoff spot. Possibly a long way to go, I don't know. They've got 3 wins, 4 losses, and 1 defeat on 10 points. Colorado, 1 win, 1 draw, 5 defeats from their 7 games, 4 points.
And they've only scored 5 goals.
Yeah, they have only let in 11, though, in their 7 games, so they're not letting in a lot. And at home, they're 1-1-1. We don't do well in Colorado.
We won there once. We won there once,
but this is the year that they could.
Didn't Darren score and we won there once?
No.
I think we drew there.
Yeah, we drew.
Oh, we've drawn.
Yeah, I don't remember us
winning. I thought we won 1-0 once on a Darren goal. I think
we should do more research for this show.
No,
that means more work.
We need one more win. We need one win out of these 2 games to reach the 9 points.
Then they got to do it.
I called for those five games.
They got to do it in Colorado because they ain't getting nothing out of Houston.
I don't know, man.
Houston is very solid at home. It's hard to get
in. We're really bad in Houston. I don't think we've won in Houston ever.
We haven't won in Texas ever.
Right. So we'll change that. Let's change that. But no,
Colorado, they're there for the taking.
Yes.
Ripe for the picking.
And you talk about Tim Howard at BC Place. We have 5 goals in 2 games against Tim Howard.
Yeah.
So Tim Howard should not daunt our team at all.
But Howard is back, and the whole situation with the suspension, it's been interesting.
We discussed it last week.
Yeah, but he kind of threw his team under the bus a little bit with his statement saying he's come out and said he feels he hasn't been given proper support by his club and by the league in this matter. That he should not have been abused the way he was, and that he's the one that's been punished for it, and he hasn't had the proper support.
So since we talked about last week, I found out what I heard that actually happened that caused the bigger problem was not the little video of the people swearing at him and him swearing back. The issue was SKC, who our Whitecaps front office has modeled their player entry off of. They enter and exit right where some high price tickets are. And someone, I think, who was inebriated, I think, came towards him. And so he kind of grabbed the person because the person was coming towards him. So it's a little bit like that the stadium setup and how it's so the players are so accessible. And I think he's right. Like, I don't think
I actually do as well. At the same time, though, I've abused a number of players over the years, verbally.
Right.
I've never obviously run onto the pitch and gone up to someone or tried to grab someone as they've gone off the pitch, but it happens in football. And I was listening to about the post-game show yesterday on my way up to UBC, and they were talking about it, and ex-players and stuff saying, goes on all the time, he should expect it, he's heard worse in England, blah, blah, blah. Until you're in that situation, you don't know how you're going to react.
But I think one of his statements said, it's not even like this in England.
No.
Especially with the access people have at that tunnel in Kansas City.
But yeah. I mean, I've seen it during Scottish games. It seems to be really bad at Tynecastle in particular, that the fans, they're so close to the action, that sometimes they get the ball and then they throw the ball at the player, at his face or into his chest, and then they're pointing at them and shouting loads of abuse. Celtic Rangers game on the weekend, there was like monkey chants going on. There was stuff getting thrown at players. I mean, that kind of stuff goes on, but the players just don't react to it. So I do see both sides. But the fact that he feels that he hasn't been supported by his club is quite telling as well.
Yeah.
Now, it's either going to play on his mind a little bit, and he's maybe going to be off his game, or he's going to have a blinder because he's wanting to come back and show this is what you've missed.
But then he is only one piece, and the team in front of him has not been good.
Oh, they've been poor.
We talked about them trading away their most significant defensive or two-way midfielder in Sam Cronin, and a starting left back in former Flounder Mark Birch.
It's been weird to see a team that looked so good last year and you thought they'd finally turned the corner after a couple of years of mediocrity. And it's like what we've said about the Whitecaps. Is 2015 the real Whitecaps playoff team, or is 2016 the real Whitecaps and they played above their weight in 2015? Now, did Colorado, was 2016 them above their weight, well, and are they a mediocre team?
Well, I think part of what the similarities between the two is both those sides had incredible years of in terms of their goals against. Right? In 2015, I think we had, for us, a record-setting goals against.
We were leading the joint leaders of the league with our
And I think it was our best in MLS.
Yes.
And Colorado last year, I believe, was like crazy with their goals against. They won tons of games 1-0, especially at home.
Yeah.
But the other thing about Colorado, and I think we did maybe talk about this earlier on the preseason or whatever, is in addition to losing Cronin and Jermaine Jones, I know he didn't play that much last year, in the center of the midfield, and Mark Birch, and I can't remember who else kind of came and went from their side, is they also lost your fellow Scotsman, John Spencer, left as assistant coach and went to San Jose. Now, maybe you can say San Jose hasn't, you know, been up and down this year, or a mixed bag this year in some ways, but there was question by people around the league saying they wonder how much influence John Spencer had last year on that defensive approach, on helping shape the team for being that compact and that solid defensively. And I'm not saying that's the only reason or the answer, but I think when so much has gone wrong in the first 7-8 games of the year, it's hard not to look at those kind of things as part of the answer.
But they still have only let in 11 goals over 7 games, so it's not as if they're shipping tons of goals. It's just they're not scoring goals.
Last year they were
shipping goals at all.
Last year they were below one goal a game, if I remember, memory serves me correct.
I think they were. It's a tough game. Altitude, obviously, don't know how hot it's going to be next Saturday, but I mean the heat's starting to get up a little bit. We do have players though that are kind of used to some of that kind of stuff. Do we go with an unchanged lineup again, or do you feel this is a time where there needs to be some tweaks? Is the altitude going to maybe take its toll on some of the guys that's played every minute for the last couple of games?
I don't think we can focus on that too much, right? Like, in our preparation, the coaches, as they prepare the players, that can't be a focal point because obviously, as the coaches talk about and they decide, okay, when are they going to travel, how quickly or how slow, like how much ahead of time or how close to kickoff are they going to arrive? And
well, Robo likes to go closer to kickoff because he feels there's no point in going unless you go way before.
Tuesday or Monday, he was talking about.
Yeah, so they're going to go, let's say they fly on Friday then, right?
Okay, I think they will.
But that's more for the coaches to decide and to talk about. In terms of your preparation with your players, that can't be too much of a focus. You have to focus on because the players know. The player knows the state. They know the stadium. It's at altitude. They know it's a little bit harder to breathe there. They know that. You don't need to highlight that, right? So I think I kind of hope we approach it in a similar way to the last two games, and I kind of hope that the formation and tactics are similar because we have seen a number of games there where I think we've seen both. I think we've seen games in Colorado, if memory serves me correctly, where we've totally just tried to bunker, quote-unquote, park the bus. And we've seen games where, at the beginning, we tried to have a go, and it didn't end so well. And we've seen games where MLS officials have robbed us from goals. So we've seen it all there.
I have a sneaking feeling we're going to see a similar 4-1-4-1 formation, but I think we might see Russell Tybert in instead of Chani, because Chani maybe isn't totally fit yet. And a game where he's maybe going to be out of breath quite early, whereas Tybert's Mr. Fitness, it makes sense for me. I'm not a fan as well. No, but it makes sense for me to have Tybert in as one of those three guys.
That's a good shout. A good possibility. Or if he does go with the exact same starting 11, I definitely, you're going to see earlier subs, I think, in this game.
Yeah.
The other is, do you think, you mentioned Rusty, do you think there's any chance, I know he was in the 18 because of the injuries and stuff, any chance Benny Mack would be considered for this, or is it?
I don't know. He's having a great season with WFC2. He's really getting forward. He's playing box to box. He's playing some of the best football that we've seen for him for years. That he had a really standout season one of the years at New Mexico, And this is what he's doing. He's leading WFC 2 at the moment in shots, I think. And yeah, I mean, he's got an engine in him that would be great to see. And he's played in the altitude with WFC 2 last season. That would be a good shout. I just wonder about Bolaños. He didn't have a fantastic game against Montreal. Wasn't poor.
He didn't stand out as much.
Some folk were quite critical of him. He seems to get a lot of criticism from people when he's not exceptional every single game.
I felt like Montreal paid a little bit more attention to him.
Yeah.
But that
he is like the key guy on the team, really.
But I think that opened up the other side more.
Yeah. I just wonder whether they may feel he's played two games in a row. He was still just coming back from all the injuries and stuff. Will they maybe rest him and put Mosqueda in? Because Mosqueda's played games in Colorado. He's played in these kind of games before. I just think he might be the guy that comes in.
Out on the left or out on the right.
Yeah, unless you even want to go with a 4-3-2-1.
Yeah.
That's a little bit too much.
Yeah, I can't see them changing the formation. And I
agree with Zach. I think it's going to be a little bit of tweaking in the lineup. I think the formation stays the same. They might have one of the guys maybe not joining the attack as much.
Yeah.
And kind of being a little bit more conservative, but yeah. I don't think the overall formation
is this would be Russell if Russell played, or Chani the way that he's been playing.
I think they'll maybe take turns. They'll know when the other guy's going forward, and then the other guy sticks back a little
bit. That might be the only tactical approach that's affected by the altitude.
So before we finish chatting about this, let's get some predictions. You're on a roll with your predictions, Zach. So I was
wrong in Portland, but yeah, okay.
We got one right.
I got Montreal right, too.
I got Montreal.
Okay, well, you're both on a roll then.
Did we choose a score?
Oh, we chose a score. I said a clean sheet.
Did I say 2-1?
Which, if Chani did his job, it would have been a clean sheet.
Did I say 2-1? I can't even remember now.
Yeah, you might have.
I mean, okay.
We'll give it to you.
There's no right or wrong, guys. Just.
Oh, man.
Says me that was wrong.
How many points were we going to get in those?
Yeah, you've won a Mars bar. So, how do you see the game going on Friday? I was going to say Saturday, but of course it's a Friday night game. So they won't be travelling on Friday. They'll probably be travelling Thursday.
Is it the Friday?
It's a Friday night game, yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Prime time, wake up.
It's a away game, wow, okay. That conflicts with other local events.
I know, Provincial Cup.
Right.
I'll miss that.
Doesn't it mix with other things?
Let's not worry about that.
TSS Rovers are playing their first PDL game, but it's away in Calgary.
Right, okay.
Anyway, what's your prediction?
My prediction, I will say, I'm hoping again for like another... like
I got 2-2 Colorado and Vancouver tied.
I'm hoping for another 2-1 victory.
I'm going to go 1-1. I've got my optimistic hat on.
Oh, no.
Semi-optimistic. I've got a semi-hat on.
Send of it.
Yeah. So we're all confident.
I was thinking different semi.
A truck.
Semi-truck.
Yeah. Or a detached house. Anyway, so we're all confident. We're going to come away from Colorado with something. Let's just see if we're right. So let's wrap this show up before we start rambling anymore and before there's any more arguments about Camilo. Just before we go, just let everyone know where they can find you online, Zach.
On Twitter, it's @ZacharyAM, and I'm a part of the Movement Curva Collective.
And Steve, how are your movements?
My movements are fine, and you can find me at WhitecapsBeat on Twitter.
I'm Michael McCall. You can find me on Twitter at AFTNCanada. Read all our stuff away from the numbers, AFTN.ca. We're going to be bringing you another podcast, probably Thursday this week, and it's going to be a TSS Rovers PDL special. We're going to have some chat with Colin Elms and Will Cromack. And if things go according to plan this week, we're also going to bring you our chat with PDL Commissioner Todd Easton. And we might have a few other little surprises thrown in there as well. So watch for that coming out probably Thursday. Thanks for listening to this episode of the show. You'll find it on all your podcast feeds soon. Watch for all our Provincial Cup coverage coming up this week. It's getting to the exciting crunch time for all these teams. So until next time, thanks for listening. Take care. And mon the Caps.
Going to your first match is an experience you never forget. The atmosphere of what's going on around the pitch looks beautiful, and you always look and go, wow, I'd love to play here one day. if you get the bug, it's going to stay with you for life.
CITR comes from Bumbershoot Music and Arts Festival, Labor Day weekend, September 1st through the 3rd at the Seattle Center, including performances by Haim, Solange, The Roots, Spoon, and more. Tickets available now at bumbershoot.com.
What if this summer you did something different? What if you worked with people you admired in a city that inspired you, making something that you were proud of? The Media Institute for Social Change is looking for students like you to be a part of their summer documentary program in Portland, Oregon. As a student, you'll create original audio and video pieces about issues that you care about. You'll meet and learn from media professionals whose work is aimed at social justice. You'll immerse yourself in Portland, a city that will serve as your hands-on media-making laboratory. Sound like your type of summer? Apply to